Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 129 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast. There's a little bit for everyone. I am Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is the greatest hostess a man could ever have. Oh my goodness, I'm too lucky to have you, Aaron Paulette.
Flatterer.
I mean, to be fair, Aaron, like, I could do this alone. Like, just imagine me sitting just in my basement, talking into my microphone with just nobody to reflect off of. It would be... Aaron, you know how weird conversations would be get. Can you imagine how weird they would get if there wasn't you going, I'm horrified.
Yeah, I've got some idea.
So how are you doing, Aaron?
The week has been better than the past couple ones, so that's good. But I am bracing myself for the onslaught of the holidays, because by the time our listeners hear this, it will be past Thanksgiving and full on into the Christmas surge.
Yeah, the show for the patrons is getting released on Black Friday.
Yeah, it's like, and we all know how I feel about Christmas. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to enjoy, last few days of sanity before everything gets freaking merry. I mean, look, if you sincerely enjoy Christmas, God bless. I'm not making fun of you. I'm not going to say that you're wrong. It's just one of those. Okay, it just occurred to me, but here's the best way to explain it. Now, if you're a morning person, this probably won't mean anything to you, at least not viscerally. But for me, so I'm not a morning person. I wake up and I'm grumpy. And it's going to take me a while to wake up, and I just want to be left alone and have my coffee. And then the morning people come in. It's like, hi, Aaron, how you doing? Wonderful day, isn't it? Come on, let's get started. Let's go, go, go. And the only thing I can do is just resist the urge to murder them so that I can have some peace and quiet while I wake up. Okay? That's me with Christmas, too. It's like, look, I just kind of want to ease into this holiday. And we've already been bombarded with things in November, and it's just like, it's Black Friday, everything's about Christmas, let's go, we're gonna sing carols and put up mistletoe and whatever, and I'm just like, dude, chill out. So, if you are a morning person, if you are a Christmas fan, God bless. I'm glad that you have something that speaks to you, but it's just, could I maybe have a little quiet time to adjust, please?
Yeah, and I gotta say, Christmas music, yeah, I'm not a fan. I don't mind Christmas, I don't mind the holiday, but boy, the music, it's not great. Like, the best I could do is Christmas Eve in New York by Shane McGowan. That's pretty darn good. I'm into that one, and that's the one I like.
I do like an album called Christmas Eve Sarajevo by Trans-Siberian Railroad.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's pretty much a hard rock verging on a heavy metal Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay.
And it's all instrumental, isn't it?
No, there are actually some words.
Oh, okay.
I don't know the exact mix, but I mean, at least half of it is purely instrumental. But it's like, okay, this is my speed. This is cool. I'm a dark, gothy type person, despite how I dress. But it's like, I am the dark chocolate. Christmas is a little too milk chocolatey for me. If we could have a dark chocolate Christmas, that'd be great.
And I enjoy the punk rock, despite how I dress.
Really, for us, Thanksgiving and then Christmas is going to be the usual thing where it's just going to be two octogenarians and myself in our house. Probably wondering how our lives got that way while we eat our dinner. But Weird, do you have any plans for this holiday?
Unfortunately, we kind of don't. We originally thought about, so normally my mom has Thanksgiving at her house and invites the whole family over, but one of our relatives is dealing with some health issues that puts him on a very, very high risk factor for COVID. And so she's just like, look, I don't want to get them involved. So she, and my parents are getting up there as well. They're concerned. And so she's just, I'm not going to do that. And we said, well, how about if we just have like you guys and maybe my mother-in-law over just for a tiny Thanksgiving at our house. And we talked about that and my wife's like, yeah, okay. And then she's thinking about it. She's like, I don't know how I feel about that. Especially my mother-in-law's in some high risk factors as well. And, then I realized, well, one thing we can do to make sure that it's safe is if anybody's even feeling remotely under the weather, they're out. And I realized that we have a small child. And sometimes a small child has been known to say, I'm not feeling so good. And that is the beginning and the end of that statement. Probably she's tired, she's hungry, something, and she just doesn't know how to read her body yet. And it's just one of those, like, I don't want to be packing in huge amounts of food to feed a large crowd and then suddenly have my daughter get the sniffles and have to say, we're not having it. But I still have a fridge full of food that now we are not going to be able to eat. And so we just called it off. It was just too complicated. So instead we are going to probably fire up a video conference of some sort in betwixt the meal to just to touch base with family members and do the best that we can in this blighted year of 2020.
Look at you being all fancy, using betwixt.
I like betwixt.
Really, my question was, well, I didn't phrase it that way, but I know that there are a lot of states like New York that are basically cracking down on how many people you can have for your Thanksgiving meal, and I didn't know if Massachusetts was one of them.
I think it does. I'm not really paying too much attention to the various things. I mean, Massachusetts is getting kind of dumb at this point in time. Like, literally, you have to, if you are outside of your, if you're not on your property, you are supposed to be wearing a mask in Massachusetts right now. My town has specifically stated that the police are going to choose to educate rather than enforce this rule, and I like the sound of that, and I certainly have seen plenty of people not bothering to wear masks and no ill effects, and it really doesn't bother me. Honestly speaking, I prefer to see the people who choose not to wear masks at all than the people that wear it with their nose hanging out or as a chin strap or all that, or the people that wear like the cloth mask around their wrist until they see suddenly somebody on the sidewalk and they scramble to put it on while putting their hands all over their face and just doing all sorts of horrible disease vector things. It's just one of those like, I understand that not everybody has studied sterile fields for surgery, but yeah, it bothers me.
So what else bothers you, Weird?
Well, I just wanted to touch on one brief topic. I mean, there's nothing else. It's November into December. It's dark all the time in New England. It's crappy weather. I wanted to kind of do, it was kind of a good news, bad news. I realized I wanted to talk about one of these things when it was current, and yeah, just now's a good enough time. But Kyle Rittenhouse is out on bail, which, it's good news for him that he is no longer in jail, especially since I heard that actually he's being put in like general adult population at the jail, which might not be a good thing, especially since how vicious the press has been for him.
So how long has he been in jail? I mean, he hasn't been in jail all this time, has he?
He absolutely has. He turned himself in the day after, or the sunrise. He was, I think the shooting took place in on and around midnight, And then he went home late or early morning the next day and then got a few hours of sleep and then turned himself into the local police, hearing the news of the riot and realizing that, you know what, I should probably let the police know that it's me. And
but he's 17 years old. He's still a minor. So surely he'd be in juvenile. So surely he would be in juvenile detention, right?
Well, given that he's 17 years old, that he's in that magical thing where it's up to a judge's discretion. I mean, you hear about the thing of the so-and-so will be tried as an adult. He more than likely will be facing, you know, in his pending trial, he'll be likely charged as an adult for the crimes that they are alleging that he did. And in theory, they can house him in an adult prison as well.
Well, that's a subject of a rant that I'm not going to get into right now. I have a problem. I have a conceptual problem with, we admit this person is a juvenile, but we'll try them as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems to me to be breaking the rule. It's like, you either state that juveniles have one set of rules and legal adults have another, or you say that there are some crimes which are so heinous that it doesn't matter what age you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so either way, you need to know what you're getting into. But there's this whole, well, we might try him as an adult and we might not. No, that's garbage. That's the very short version.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was surprised to learn that he's been not just in jail, but in adult jail for months now.
Mm-hmm.
I really would have thought that he would have been in some sort of a low-level, you know, juvenile detention thing.
I mean, I myself am not a legal expert, but I have heard other legal experts point out that some of that could have been avoided had his legal counsel been more versed in self-defense cases than they are. His defense lawyer really doesn't have a background in self-defense cases.
Oh, that bodes well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I honestly speaking, I just wanted to say that, yeah, he was let out and really just state this story as simply a statement of, again, go get some concealed carry insurance. I say insurance. It's not legally insurance. It's an endowment that you have access to in the event that you are in a defensive shooting, or in this case, you know, any sort of defensive event, depending on who you choose to have. But if he had had one of these many groups, really any of the ones that I can think of, it would have immediately amounted in, he would have bail money, he would have a lawyer that specifically specializes in this and is part of, you know, their legal network, which is stating that, yeah, the people that are signing up for this are people that routinely carry for self-defense. So therefore, if they end up shooting somebody, it's probably going to be for self-defense. It is not going to be, these are not gangbangers shooting each other and you're trying to get it pled down to a lesser crime. Or in the case of his current lawyer, this is just a big news case, because this is the guy that represented the McCloskeys and Nicholas Sandman and all. It seems like many of his previous clients are people that you know about from the news. So we wish him luck. You do a little search if you want to sling some money his way, but because he's still got an uphill battle on that. But I just wanted to point out that's just another great reason to have concealed carry insurance, because you might be doing all the right things. I personally think I've watched the videos of his shooting, and besides my personal choice of the, I am not going to go anywhere where people are quote unquote peacefully protesting with, you know, Molotov cocktails and burning dumpsters and clubs and pipes and guns and such. But as far as, as the events unfurled, I don't see anything bad about his shooting. I don't think that he committed any crimes as far as I could see. I'm not a lawyer, and the courts will be ruling, and I have not seen probably all the evidence that there is, and that will be up for the courts to decide. But again, even something as cut and dry as I think this is, you can end up being pilloried because of politics. And so it is a good idea to have, I mean, these concealed carry insurance groups are relatively inexpensive. you know, especially some of, you know, especially if you've got enough money to pay for like multiple years worth of insurance, you can get a discount on it. And it's not a ton of money. And given the fact that he had to post $2 million worth of bail to get out. I don't know if that's the 10%, but even at 10%, that's $200,000. Just go get some insurance. If you have a gun or you are doing anything for self-defense, go get yourself some insurance. It will, in the event that this happens, it will be worth every penny you paid for it.
So one thing in one of those articles, the one that links to NBC Chicago, it contained a detail that I didn't know, and I find it really disturbing. And according to this article, and I just want to point out, I've not heard it anywhere. That doesn't mean it's not true, because I try to avoid a lot of politics. Well, I'm not saying it's true because it's in the media. I'm also not saying it's not true. But according to NBC5 Chicago, in a phone interview, Rittenhouse revealed that the gun he used in the shooting was purchased using money he received from an unemployment check. I think it was the coronavirus stimulus check. Mm-hmm. And being 17, he couldn't legally purchase the rifle, so he gave the money to a friend to buy it for him. And that's a straw purchase. And the straw purchaser, somebody, Dominic Black, 19-year-old, who's been charged with 2 felony counts of supplying a dangerous weapon to a minor causing death. I'm not entirely sure why there are 2. And so, yeah, Dominic Black has been arrested for this. And I'm trying to figure out if Rittenhouse knew that what he was asking his friend to do was illegal. And on the one hand, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. It's like, no, he's just a kid. He doesn't know. But then if we do the whole he's just a kid, then we go, well, why was he there with a gun? It's not that it casts his motives in a bad light, but it comes down to a question of maturity, really. And if we as gun owners want to say he did everything right to defend himself, then we're going to have to face the fact that he may have been involved in a straw purchase, which is illegal, and that's going to bite us. Mm-hmm. Is really where I'm going with this. And I was really, really disappointed to hear this, because it does change the tenor of the conversation, and it changes every subsequent action of his in into a different light.
I mean, I think it also goes down the weird, convoluted rabbit hole of how dumb firearms laws are, in that, well, first up, I mean, I gotta say, this is one of those situations where I don't know if he had a good lawyer, I think he may get off on it, because again, it's my understanding, I'm trying to remember if it says this in this specific report, but the whole reason why his friend in Wisconsin, because this is the Wisconsin resident that gave him the rifle when they were called to come defend the business, was essentially, he was the one in possession of the firearm. It was staying at his house. This firearm has never been in the state of Illinois, where Rittenhouse lives. And so the idea that this guy bought it, it's at his house, Kyle has assumed shot with it. The idea was he had it in Wisconsin because that's where he goes hunting. And so this was a hunting gun for him. It really gets into a gray area of whose gun is this. Kyle paid for it and possibly selected it. But it's never been in his, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law. It's never been in his physical possession, so to speak. He's always really been borrowing it when he has been using it, including that night in Wisconsin. And it gets into that weird, goofy gray area. An analogy I want to make is, currently there are 2 cars in my driveway. Technically speaking, both of them belong to, actually, I don't know if it's specifically in my name or my wife's name or both of our names. I don't really know exactly how the titles are set up, but technically both of them are registered to us, though one of them belongs to my mother-in-law. She was planning on moving down to Massachusetts this year, and she elected to stay in Maine an additional year because, again, she's in some COVID risk factors. And I agree with it. Stay in the place that has less population and less cases. And so this car has been, it was a car that belonged to some friends. It had a very costly repair that was done to it, and they really were ready to get a newer car. And so they ended up just giving it to us. They just said, get it out of our driveway. So I had it towed to my mechanic. And then my mother-in-law paid the mechanic's bill of all the repairs. The mechanic got it running again. And then we ended up registering it so that it could be driven around. And so it is technically in our name, though my mother-in-law has paid the freight for this thing, even though it was me who was involved in all the repairs. And so whose car is it? And the bottom line, the answer is, who cares as far as the law goes? You know, the only issue comes is if we wanted to turn around and sell it and my mother-in-law didn't agree with that. Well, that would be a case for the courts. But as far as just the it sitting in my driveway, my mother-in-law is fine with that. We're fine with that. That's where it sits. Nobody cares. But suddenly when it comes to firearms, suddenly this is a big deal. And gun laws can be so dumb. And I remember just there's been many times when I've been carrying a firearm and I've been hanging out with a bunch of people who don't carry firearms. And it's one of those, hey, let's cut across that school grounds to walk somewhere. Well, I can't do that. Hey, let's go into the post office. Well, I can't do that. You know, the idea that suddenly, you know, let's go into this bar in a state that doesn't allow carry in restaurants that have liquor licenses. And it's just people don't realize the goofy and nonsensical legal loopholes that gun owners jump through. And I got to wonder if Kyle realized how dumb this all was. Because, again, it's my understanding. Again, there's some weird like loopholes on where and what it's allowed for somebody who is 17 years of age in Illinois and Wisconsin to possess a rifle. But I believe it's not illegal for a minor to possess a rifle in these states. It's certainly not illegal for a minor to use a rifle. And so it's legal for him to have the rifle. Kyle Rittenhouse is not a prohibited person. It's not against the law for him to take possession of this rifle. And the rifle is not crossing state lines where it would be illegal for him to possess it because goofy laws of you can't transfer ownership across state lines without using an FFL. No, you could, but you would need to use an FFL. You can't do a private sale. Either way, if this is just one of those foolish gossamer of goofy laws written by people who just don't seem to live in real life. And so I have every sympathy for him, because a logical and rational person would not just immediately think what I'm doing is against the law.
Okay. I mean, yes, that's true. But when you are a gun owner, you assume some responsibility. Mm-hmm. And one of those responsibilities is learning all of the goofy, stupid laws that affect you.
Yep.
And okay, again, I'm torn. Okay, he's 17 years old. He's a kid, but he's representing us. Mm-hmm. And he bought the gun. He ought to know this stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm in complete agreement with you about how these laws are dumb. But unfortunately, they're the laws we have to live under.
They're absolutely the laws.
And you know, we make a big deal of being law-abiding gun owners. And, you know, we have to abide with it even if it's stupid. And so this is troublesome for me, and I don't know what I hope. I mean, I guess I would rather that he admit ignorance to this than, well, yes, I knew it was wrong and I did it anyway, because that would look really bad. Mm-hmm. But even if he says, well, I didn't know it was wrong, that still looks bad, dude, because you ought to know these things. Your friend ought to know these things. So there's... this is not a good look for anybody.
Yeah. Well, there's always the hope for jury nullification as well, where the jury just goes, wait, this is against the law? That's dumb. So yes, he's guilty of committing the crime, but no, we're not going to stand for that. The law is wrong.
So the script here says, Aaron introduce Washington in plain English. The thing is, though, as you're about to hear when the segment plays, Weird already introduces it. He introduces everything. There is literally no reason for me to be doing this except for balance. So play the segment, Weird.
Longtime fans of the show probably remember Connie in Washington in plain English. And I'd like to welcome Connie back to the Assorted Calibers podcast. How you doing, Connie?
Okay, Weird. Thanks. It's a great thing to be coming home.
So we were just talking before we started recording about some volunteer work that you're doing, and it's very topical to the issue du jour.
Yep. I'm volunteering with an outfit called Every Legal Vote. We're at everylegalvote.com. We've been censored out the wazoo by big tech already, and this is a fight to ensure the integrity of the elections.
Well, that's awesome. So what is this group doing?
What we're doing is we're analyzing vote patterns. We've got volunteers who are analyzing the vote machines. We've got people who are gathering reports from all 50 states about anomalies they've seen in the election process or in the pattern of votes coming in for the election. And we're trying to make certain that all the legal votes get counted and no more, but no less, because we were seeing things like one house getting five generation residents worth of absentee ballots, today they're mail-in ballots, and other people showing up at polling stations and saying, and being turned away because they were told, you've already voted by mail-in, you can't vote in person. And they're like, what? I never received a mail-in ballot, which is crazy. I mean, this is our most precious right, the right to decide who makes the laws we're forced to live by. Right. And these people are being disenfranchised.
And so, again, so these are coming in from all 50 states, not just the states that are currently under either recount or legal challenge.
Yep. We're starting there. We're getting reports from Pennsylvania and elsewhere. I've heard of some in Virginia, and there's a separate project there, Project Virginia, who's collecting information on Virginia. I mean, you have to start somewhere, right? But we're trying to gather them for all over because it looks like there were problems all over.
And so what specifically are you doing? What's your specialty here?
Mostly listening and introducing people. And sometimes I get reports from individuals and I make certain they're plugged in. And I stay informed and I try and tell other people what's going on, just like we're doing right now.
Oh, that's awesome. What can people do to help if they're hearing about this now? And of course, obviously, there's a little bit of a delay just with the publication of the podcast, but something tells me when this is coming out, it's going to be just as topical. What can people do to help make sure that there is more voter integrity and they can help clear things up and get everybody's vote counted?
Well, we have a site, everylegalvote.com, and we actually have a button on the page you can hit, the Take Action page. It's looking to help. We made it easy. You hit the Take Action button. You have five actions you can take. You can join our grassroots campaign, which is going to be petitioning state legislatures to clean up their election process. We have a page where you can, if you witnessed fraud, you can let us know about it. You can check the status of your own vote to see if your own vote was counted. And we have a channel on Telegram that you can join as well.
That's great. Now, so for checking your vote, I'll say right now, one of the things that I've got that I'm a bit curious on, and I have seen some sites, and I'm not 100% sure if I trust the ones that I've seen that allow me to test if I have voted in other states, because I grew up in the state of Maine, but I've lived in Massachusetts for the last 15 some years. And my parents still live in the house that I grew up in. They've been receiving applications for me to apply for my my mail-in ballot in Maine under what was my legal address when I was in that state. And I am very, very curious to see if by chance a vote had been cast for me or by some of my other friends who are expats of either the state of Maine or other states, to see if they might have voted in a state that they're not a resident of.
Well, why don't you check out everylegalvote.com/check-my-vote, and you can go find out for yourself. You can select the state and enter your information.
Awesome. And that will be linked in the show notes. Well, and thank you so. And I'll be checking that out. And so you'll hear me shortly telling about what I found.
Good. This is a topic I'm really, really sensitive about, because I grew up mixed race in the South not long after the end of Jim Crow, right? This was Loving versus Virginia, was written by the Supreme Court a couple years before I was born. And, you know, what's the importance of this? Well, you know, Black people's votes, or the votes of people who weren't white people, were not treated the same as the votes of white people. They were disenfranchised. You know, they had to go through things like poll taxes. And here, now we have things like that happening here, where, you know, if a mail-in ballot and your name shows up somewhere else and somebody else votes it, that's your vote they've stolen. That's your rights they've taken away. And the only way that we're going to get this straight is if all of us come together to make certain that our votes are counted properly.
That is an amazing cause. And go in the show notes, check it out, go and see what you can find out and see how you can help at everylegalvote.com. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Connie.
Thanks, Weird.
I do want to say that it is really great to have Connie back. When we first started, she was very nervous and she wanted someone else to, I guess, make sure that she was doing it okay. And it got kind of frustrating for me because we would end up talking over each other. And at some point, I basically said, look, Connie, I love you. I don't have time for this. You should know what the segment is by now. And I trust you to do it. And she's insanely busy with her two kids. And she's doing a bunch of she's not just working for Every Legal Vote. She was up until the election working with something else. And she hooked Operation Blazing Sword up with somebody. And so she's got a lot of pans in the fire. And, you know, that's why you haven't heard from her for a long time. But Weird has the time in his schedule to talk to her. And it's my understanding that she just does so much better when she's got someone else to bounce ideas off of. Make it a conversation instead of a recorded segment. And so it's really great to have her back. Although, I mean, other than just talking about Every Legal Vote, and that's good, I don't know, I was expecting a little more inside baseball as to, well, you know, here's what we've discovered. I was expecting something salacious, and I didn't get any juicy hot goss.
Well, Connie, if you're listening, we want the juice. But I will say that I mentioned at the end of the segment that I was going to dive into the link in the show notes and search. Mm-hmm. And I will say I was very happy to find that I ended up searching, because I had all the pertinent information for them myself when I lived in Maine. Nate Spencer when he lived in Maine, who does our wonderful music, and also my wife when she was still had her maiden name and was living on her own. And I searched all of them, and none of those ballots were claimed in this election. So at least in Massachusetts and Maine, there were not shenanigans that I could find.
So I actually checked on Florida for myself, and all I got was voter registration information. Mm-hmm. It didn't really tell me if it had captured my vote or not.
Okay.
And I don't know why that is. It might just be the difference between how Massachusetts works versus how Florida works.
All the states are different. I mean, for Nate and I, all I had to do was write that I mean, I was living in legally, my voter registration was in South Portland, Maine. His voter registration was in Portland, Maine. And I'm trying to remember if we needed a zip code, but it was much simpler in Maine. For my wife in Massachusetts, I had to give her full address and all that. So it's every state is a little bit different when you click through on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just, you know, name, street address, zip code, my voter identification number, date of registration, party and voter status. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's kind of disappointing.
Speaking of elections, on election day, Sarah and John Hopman posted a video where Sarah stuck her I voted sticker on the butt of her carry gun in a wonderful display of our American rights. In the comments, somebody asked what the holster she was using, and she said she couldn't talk about it right now, but she would soon. Well, soon is right now, and I sat down with Sarah and John of Filster Holsters to talk about their revolutionary product, the Enigma Holster Chassis. I would like to welcome to the show the proprietors of Filster Holsters. We have John and Sarah Hopman, and I want to talk about your new release, the Enigma.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So tell us all about the Enigma.
Well, this is going to be a lot of fun because there's no visual component here. So I want you to step into your mind and join me in a world of your imagination. Okay, so Enigma, starting at the very beginning, we're going to tell the whole backstory here. And those of you who are listening at home can Google along with us and sort of find the things that we reference and pick up as we go along.
I'll also put any links in the show notes, so you can go to the website and you can click away, so you don't necessarily have to worry if you got the right thing or not.
Cool. So I've been making holsters since 2011, and I started off making stuff, you know, in the spare room of my house, and the business has gone through a number of evolutions and changes from custom work to production work to being a system of vendors and workshops that each have their own specialty, and most of what I do is design things and figure out how to have them manufactured, and then we work with the distributors to supply everything. So we can stay nimble and flexible and do a whole bunch of cool stuff. And a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago, I restructured the business to kind of get all the production off my table. With that came a lot of cool opportunities to get new things made and to explore things that weren't possible when it was just me making holsters one at a time at my workshop. So a whole cool world of possibilities opened up. And with those possibilities, I reached out to a friend of mine named Jules. Jules runs a company called Runcible Works, and I've known him for a number of years as someone who makes really cool, experimental, inside-the-waistband holster technology. I'd see pictures of these things online, and I'd be like, who's making these? Where are these coming from? These are really interesting. They're more like an undergarment than anything else. It's like a holster shell with a belt built into it and accessory carriers built into it. And I'd see a lot of people, especially women, who have gone through programs like ECQC and who are like very heavily involved in like jiu-jitsu and whatnot and take concealed carry really seriously. They get into these kinds of products because they're actually low profile, and it's something that they can carry in yoga pants, and allows them to carry like a real proper gun and a whole concealed carry setup concealed in their yoga pants. But these systems were experimental. They took a while to get made. And I reached out to Jules to try to figure out how we were going to help him kind of mass produce these things.
Yeah, funny story about that. I actually encountered Rensselaer Works before I ever met John and tried to get one and couldn't get one. They were like out of production and there was like no way to get a hold of, you know, anyone to get these, to get one of them made for you, because it's basically like a bespoke concealment system that's independent of your clothing.
Right. And I never saw two identical ones. Every time I saw a picture of one, it was a little different from another one and it had some new technology or some other material. And all I knew was that you kind of had to know the handshake and the code word at the speakeasy to even get a hold of the guy to make them. But I kind of pulled a bunch of strings and I tracked him down and I insisted on being friends with him and reached out to start a collaboration. Because, you know, we had come into a position here at Filster where we kind of had more manufacturing doors open for us. And I'm like, wow, we could really get some very cool stuff made. And so back in 2018, Jules drove down from New York to Philly when I was still living in Philly. And we sat down in my kitchen with a whole big pile of holsters and an enormous sketch pad and started drawing out ideas for how we were going to streamline, simplify, and distill the essence of the thing that he was making into something that we could actually offer to people at scale. Like, these are really cool ways to solve these problems. And these need to exist more than one at a time. And so we started that process, and Jules and I went on for 18 months of designing this. Back and forth revisions. We had a test group of people. We'd send them samples. We'd get feedback. We'd change something. And we went through this arduous process of kind of like two steps forward, one step back for like a year and a half on this. And one day I was in our office here at the house. And I had a pile of material, this specialty material that we were using for some other project. And Sarah came over and said, "Hey, do you mind if I use some of this?" And I said, "Yeah, all I'm doing is wasting it trying to get this other product made." And she came back with this piece cut out of it that she had bolted to one of her holsters and said, "What do you think about this?" And I said, "I think you just completely obviated a year and a half of R&D. And we are now going to take this idea that Jules and I have been working on and start from square one using this kind of thought process and concept." And so we started from scratch again after a year and a half and settled on, instead of using some kind of like Velcro wrap or like holster pocket that you put a real holster in to accomplish this, we settled on using this like laser cut, semi-rigid future fabric that you can bolt things to and attach to it and actually even sew things to in some cases, to create a faceplate that attaches to any inside the waistband holster that you have pretty much. You take all the clips off, you take the loops off, and all you leave on is like the little holster claw that helps you conceal the holster better when you're carrying it inside the waistband. Bolt on this faceplate and attach a specialty made belt to it that we have. And then you attach a small leg lanyard onto it so it doesn't ride up or move around. And so you actually get a little bit of resistance to your draw stroke. And you can wind up concealing a gun better and more comfortably than you can with a belt. Like, people are used to, oh, just get a better gun belt. Like, the gun belt is the gold standard of concealed carry because we never experienced anything that's better than that. Alternatives to carrying with a belt are typically things that come with a bunch of compromises that people aren't happy with, like belly bands or some other thing that have like a whole assorted set of problems. And even people who go so far as to do stuff like put a rigid holster shell in a belly band, the belly band doesn't do any of the concealment things that come from having a belt. You know, like, there's all sorts of advancements, especially in the past 10 years, of like building wings and claws into your holster so you get like grip rotation and better concealment, or you've got a little bit of a wedge on your holster to help keep it from printing. And you give all of that up in a belly band, pretty much. However, with our system, you can place it anywhere you want in terms of ride height, independent of your belt. You can adjust how far the grip rotates. You can adjust how far your slide prints if you need to restrain it from printing, depending on your body shape. It's rigid where it needs to be, it's flexible where it needs to be, and it's adjustable in ways that become possible only when you liberate the holster from your gun belt.
So you asked, see, we really should have led with this, but you asked, what is Enigma? And Enigma is a concealment chassis that is completely independent of your clothing that allows you to get the amount of concealment that you would get from a belt. And it acts on your Kydex holster shell as a belt acts on it. So you get the good amount of like grip rotation, grip tuck, that you would actually better, that you would get from a belt, but without having to be tethered to the belted waistband of your clothing. So it's awesome. It's basically a system that frees you from frees you from the tyranny of pants. You don't need to worry about that anymore. You can wear this with a belt.
You could essentially wear this unit completely naked if you wanted to. And then essentially you just put clothes on to cover the gun.
Yes, it is the essence of concealment.
You could Donald Duck it. All you need to do is wear a shirt over your gun. That's all you need. You could be out there with like Donald Duck, or does Porky Pig wear pants, or does he only wear
a
shirt?
No, he does not wear pants.
Right. You could be like your favorite pantsless cartoon character and conceal your gun wearing nothing but a shirt.
Yeah, it works great for skirts too. Which means it also works well for kilts.
We know you kilt dudes are out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of you.
Well, also another thing that you guys mentioned in your release video and all that, this solves many of the problems that women have in the concealed carry world, namely that they might have pants or skirts or things that don't have belt loops, or have belt loops that won't accommodate the heavier gauge gun belts that are out there, so they're forced to make other choices and, you know, compromise. I'm someone who doesn't wear belts, and so I usually carry in a shoulder holster, a pocket carry. I have a belly band, but one of the things that it does do is you get it so that it's just right and it's concealing the gun and it's doing all the right things. And then 5 minutes of walking around on it, everything's somewhere else.
Yeah. I tried to jog in a belly band once and it was like up, it was like up to my boobs within 5 minutes. I'm like, this is not going to work. Anything elastic when you're pear-shaped just like squeezes up to the point of lowest resistance. So it like nothing stays in place. But yeah, with this product, one of the reasons we came up with this chassis system is because I've got a lot of belly bands too. Like they're all in the trash now. All of the stuff that is marketed to women, it's marketed to us because our clothing is different and our fashion is different. And, you know, things like your pants rise matter a lot in women's clothing. And the cool thing about this is like, you're not tethered to only wearing mom jeans so that you can, you know, strap on your holster and have your gun in the right place. You can position your gun completely independently. You can basically wear whatever you want and you can achieve better concealment than you were getting with your belt anyway.
Yeah. I've been describing the realm of women's concealed carry as a pink lacy ghetto where somehow, because the body types appear different and the style of dress appears different, that means that, of course, then your equipment requirements can be different too. They're not. The equipment requirements of a holster remain the same. It needs to be secure, consistent, stable, and safe. And a lot of that, those boundaries get pretty blurry over in the women's concealed carry space. And what it winds up being is something that's soft, pink, lacy, stretchy, because that is somehow, like, it doesn't take the women seriously. It doesn't take women users seriously. And what we've done is that we've taken gun carriers very seriously, and we've offered them something that exceeds the equipment that they currently have. And it just so happens that in doing so, it, and in freeing you from liberating the gun from the gun belt in a way that doesn't also come with a whole bunch of elastic safety compromises, opens up a world of possibility for women as well, who have been used to trying to make equipment work with their wardrobe. Now you just put on your gun, you put it where you want it, you adjust the concealment, and then you get dressed around it. And there's all sorts of other stuff too. So, you know, like there are a lot of women who wind up in a circumstance where they're like, oh, well, I just need to wind up with a better gun belt. And they wind up with a really stiff, heavy gun belt. And there are so many more variables than just a belt that cause concealment. So you'll wind up in a circumstance where, I mean, a lot of women's jeans are kind of low rise. And no matter what kind of holster you have and what kind of belt you have, messing around with low rise jeans is going to change how you conceal, because the amount of gun that can potentially be below the belt line is limited. The belt line is low, and which means that the belt turns into kind of a low equator below the outward curve of the abdomen. And so you get a lot of printing and tip over when you're wearing low rise jeans. You get poor concealment. The gun tips out over the belt. You're often in a circumstance where you kind of have to negotiate around pointing the gun at yourself by accident to get the gun back in the holster. And if you free the gun from the waistband, then you can put it on the point of your body where it conceals the best and get dressed around it, instead of having to negotiate your belt line with your physiology.
Yeah, I'm kind of at the point now where I'm almost offended by some of the stuff that's marketed to women. I look at some of this stuff and, you know, I get why it's appealing. It's like everybody wants to be comfortable. And these products that are marketed to women are like, oh, it's comfortable because it's soft. But the softness of it is not actually what makes it comfortable. So I come from the healthcare world. That's kind of my background. And there's a phenomenon in the healthcare world that we talk about a lot, which is bed sores, right? So bed sores on patients, and what causes those? How do you prevent them? It's something that's studied very extensively. And what causes bed sores is not necessarily the softness of the material that's against the skin. It's the pressure points that are created by that material. So you could have the softest material in the world, but if your pressure points are wrong, then that material will cause bed sores. So when we were designing this, we weren't thinking of it from the perspective of like, well, if we can just make it soft enough, it'll be comfortable. We're thinking of it as if we can make this as anatomically correctly shaped as possible, then it will be comfortable regardless of what the surface feels like. So that's one of the things that John has also done with the Pro Series holster. That holster is optimized to use with the Enigma. And the unique thing about it is the body side of the holster, instead of being shaped like the muzzle of your gun, which is pointy, it's shaped like your body, which is, you know, basically more or less flat. So a flat section of the holster interfaces with a flat section of the body. It eliminates a lot of pressure points. So that kind of design is what we've had in the back of our mind as we were creating this project. It's like, we don't want to make something that just looks good on the surface because it's soft and pink and lacy. Like, we want to make something that actually solves the problems that women have on a deep ergonomic level. And then you can put whatever surface on it you want. That's fine. Like, for me, I have sensitive skin, so I just like to wear either an undershirt or like a bandeau bra at waist level underneath my holster just so it doesn't contact my skin. But that has nothing to do with how actually comfortable the holster is and whether or not it creates pressure points and sores on my body.
Yeah, so something that we've been thinking about for a long time, and a way that I've been introducing newer people to concealed carry isn't one of like, well, you know, here's the best holster you can get. You buy it off the shelf, you put it on, and miracle of miracles, you'll experience the most concealment you've ever had in your life. Everybody's body is different. So in order to accomplish concealment, you need to approach it as though it's like fitting a prosthesis. You're taking this inorganic, machine-made thing and integrating it into your body for 10 hours a day. That's what people do when they have to wear a prosthetic limb or another kind of orthotic appliance. So there's some fitting involved. And I've gone over things like how to make sure your holster fits and how to make little adjustments to your holster, and, you know, by adding material like a foam wedge or what have you, in order to accomplish the concealment and comfort that you need from it. What we've done with the Enigma is by replacing regular belt loops and clips with this adjustable faceplate and integrated belt, we've increased the range of what's possible in terms of those adjustments, and we've increased the range of adjustability that's available before you start modifying the holster. So you can do a lot of the kinds of adjustments that you would ordinarily do by adding wedge material or stuff like that, just by repositioning the belt relative to the holster. And by increasing that range of adjustability, we've come up with something that accommodates a much wider variety of body shapes and types, regardless of gender, than what has previously been available. So we've had all these concerns about women's concealed carry kind of on a back burner, thinking, okay, someday we're going to really tackle this thing, and we're going to drill down to what's at the heart of the problem here. And, you know, maybe someday we'll figure out how to make something that's like genuinely for women. And I think what we've done here is, by making something that's actually kind of for everybody, we've solved the adjacent women's concealed carry issues.
Yeah, like we didn't set out to make an amazing women's holster, but like, whoops, we did. And I know for me, here's an example of one problem that I wanted to solve with this faceplate system. So you kind of know how when you're carrying a smaller gun, you end up with this tipping out problem because the center of gravity of the gun is high compared to where the belt line is, right? So the gun tends to tip out, the muzzle tends to poke in, and you end up with a hot spot. You know, if you're carrying appendix, you end up with a hot spot in your abdomen where the muzzle pokes you. And that was a problem I tried to solve with conventional holsters for quite some time. And I was adding wedges to them. And, you know, I was doing all these things to like try to make them comfortable. And again, it gets back to what we were saying before about softness versus ergonomics. And it's like, there's no pad that you're going to put on your holster that's going to significantly improve the ergonomics if the mechanics of the holster are wrong. So what we did with this faceplate is we curved it. And it sounds like a simple thing, but by curving this faceplate from top to bottom,
kind of like a boomerang.
Like a boomerang, yeah. What we did was we moved the effective belt line of the gun higher, which changes the center of gravity, and it changes where that that balance point is and that tipping point. So we moved the center of gravity higher without compromising access to the grip, because right, the material we use is has a high stiffness to weight ratio. So we're able to curve that fabric and leave enough room for your hand to access the grip while moving the effective belt line higher. And that basically, for me, eliminated that tipping out problem and eliminated that hot spot. And I was able to do that without making the gun softer or pinker.
So imagine, if you will, if you'll jump back into the world of imagination with me. Imagine putting a gun in your waistband low enough that the grip starts to go below the belt, right? And think about how that feels. It feels pretty comfortable, and it's generally pretty concealable, except for the fact that now you kind of have to reach into your pants to access the gun. And that's a compromise that people are right to stay away from. Now imagine if you could get that same feeling and concealment, except for the fact that there was more or less a cutout for your hand to go. By curving the faceplate, that allows the belt to feel as though it were intersecting the grip of the gun without actually being in your way, which does a lot of work to keep the muzzle from poking you. It does a lot of work to keep the top of the gun pressed into your body, so there's never like a gap between your body and the gun in such a way that would cause it to print really aggressively either. So there's a lot of adjustment capability that becomes possible once you don't have to worry about the belt actually interfering with your grip.
That's absolutely amazing. So the final question I have is, where can we find this wonderful system, and when will it be available?
Enigma is going to be available on or before Black Friday at philsterholsters.com. That's P-H-L-S-T-E-R holsters.com. So on the website, which is being finished now, the Enigma part of it, there will be a choose your experience. So you can select a male or female model and sort of see how Enigma looks in a variety of different clothes, from yoga pants and sweatpants all the way to, you know, like skirts and jackets and stuff. And it'll tell you all about it as you scroll through, and you can get a really good idea of what this is about, rather than just sort of looking at the product page and going, huh, this looks complicated, and being lost in the sauce. We're going to have instruction videos and adjustment guidelines and whatnot. And also, a really good place to learn about this is our Facebook group, the Filster Concealment Workshop, where people are more passionate fans, I guess, are involved in helping each other out with their concealed carry journeys and questions.
Yeah, and I also highly recommend going to the Filster Facebook page or YouTube channel and just watching the launch video, because I know talking about this, it's kind of hard to envision how it actually works. But once you see the video, it's a 3-minute video and you'll be like, oh, it really illuminates it.
And links to all of that will be in the show notes for this podcast. And so I would like to thank Sarah and John for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
All right, so this isn't relevant to the product at all, but let me just say that if Sarah and John ever have children, their kids are going to have the best voices ever. Oh my God, I don't know if it's just their recording setup or what, but you know, I've met Sarah in real life. She's got a beautiful voice. I don't really remember John's voice, but it seemed okay. But oh my God, they've got these incredible radio voices. And I look forward to their kids being like voice actors or something. That's just amazing.
Yeah. Well, the good news is, again, I've got back-to-back interviews from two separate people who do podcasts. And so, yeah, I was just saying, look, you guys got the juice. Can you record on your end too and do exactly what Aaron and I are doing, where you are listening to Aaron and I's local recordings only? And that's exactly what I did with Sarah and John. And it just, the sound quality is so much better. I know it's a podcast,
but there's a big difference between sound quality and hello, my name is John. Mm-hmm. How are you doing? Or whatever. It's just, oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah. No, they do have great radio voices. Though I will also say I am not terribly impressed with my voice, but let me tell you, after I'm done working my magic on this, you know what? I think I got a pretty good radio voice. But it's all dress up. It's all dress up.
Well, yeah, we know how much I hate my radio voice. But we're not going to get into that. Okay, so I actually listened to the entire segment because they're my friends and they sound fantastic. And that was like a 25-30 minute segment. And I'm having a hard time understanding what it is. And so I followed the link to the live stream and I fast forwarded for a bit. And I think it's somewhere like around the 12-minute mark. They actually show the video and it's like a 3-minute production video. And it's like, oh, yeah. So if you guys are confused, you really need to watch the video. Okay, the link to the YouTube live stream is like over an hour, but you know, weird, we really need to put it in the time code for when the actual video starts so that our listeners can see for themselves, and then it'll become super duper clear.
Well, I think they've also got one in like the first 5 minutes. They have their actual launch video, but I will also say that hopefully by the time that this show is published, they will have completely gone live on the Filster website with the Enigma holster. Cause again, this is going to be airing on Black Friday, and Black Friday is the time when they are planning on launching the product fully to the public. So
do we have a price point for the Enigma yet?
Quick interruption. This is Weird Beard from the ever so slightly more future. Filster Holsters has put up their Enigma page. It's in the show notes. The Filster Enigma is going to be going for $85, and a Pro Series holster, which is the holster that's optimized for it, is going to be going as a bundle, go for an additional $80. So that puts it at approximately $165 plus shipping and handling. So Carry On, which is right online with like a high-end shoulder holster, which is absolutely, I would say, an appropriate statement because it has both a holster and it has the system for carrying the holster. The idea of buying a holster and a gun belt. And
it's a shoulder holster for your pelvis.
It really is a shoulder holster for your pelvis. I was absolutely floored by this product, and they are this is not the only interview that they've been doing. I'm sure their voices are completely run ragged from all the interviews they're doing for all the people that want to hear about their amazing system, but it just blows my mind at the possibilities that this has, both for people wanting to just dress however they want. Again, we always say dress around the holster and pick the concealment method that fits with how you dress. Ta-da! This is the holster system that fits with how you dress. It's just, unless you are wearing something so tight that you cannot, unless you are inhaling deeply to button the button of your jeans every morning to get it in there, you're going to be able to wear this system under your clothes. And it's just amazing. You wear it in a skirt. You can wear it in a bathrobe. Wear it in a kilt. It doesn't matter. Sweat.
You can Donald Duck it. I remember that.
Exactly. I mean, it's just that cool that you have that level of freedom with this system. And then again, the big thing is that they weren't intending for it, but this solves so many issues with women's clothing, because women's clothing sucks for concealed carry. They got,
yes, I know,
they got teeny tiny pockets, if not no pockets at all. So that precludes pocket carry. And then most of the time they don't have a system to support the standard heavy duty gun belt that's going to do the best at supporting your holster and all that. So again, that's why so many women enjoy purse carry.
Mm-hmm.
Just like everything else that they said, it is a compromise, but sometimes it is the absolute best compromise, because where the heck else am I going to put it?
Yeah, that's exactly why I do it. I am fully aware of all the problems, and I don't like the problems it causes, but for me, it really is the least sucky solution of all of them.
Mm-hmm. And so this is amazing. But yeah, hopefully the site will be fully live by the time the show is going through. But also, there is the launch video on there, and there is some amazing footage. There is one where Sarah is just popping on some clothes, and you just see, all right, she's got a gun on. And then it just disappears, and she's trying to make it print, and it doesn't want to. Ugh, I am so happy for them. They are wonderful, hardworking people, and they deserve every bit of this glory. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To me, our Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibrespodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Fine, if you're going to take it at a run, so will I. Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with friends both online and off.
I got a blog called Weird World, and I'm on Firearms Radio Network. It's called Handgun Radio.
And I got a couple of blogs, and some charities, and stuff.
Aaron's a big deal. You know who's also a big deal? Nate Spencer. He does our music.
Well, you see here, now, Weird's not just a Yankee, he's a damn Yankee. And them Yankees, they're always in a rush, always just going, 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 going so fast. Meanwhile, I'm from the South, where we like to take it easy. We kick back a bit, put our feet up, maybe just unbuckle that belt and enjoy the sunset on our porch. Our speeds for talking are assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, y'all.
Good night.